Hi, my name is Rutendo Nyamuda, and welcome to a very intellectual episode of In My 20s. In My 20s? So on today's episode, our guest really challenges various schools of thought and also gives you a little bit of insight into the books he reads. And without a doubt, at the end of editing this episode, I really wanted to consume a lot more African literature and African content, be it video, audio, and even books. So welcoming himself onto the In My 20s platform and into the In My 20s family, here he is.
My name is Siyavuya Matikane. How I describe myself is, it's a young, ambitious man from a hot small town called Ngqamakwe in the Eastern Cape. That's where I wasn't born there, but that's where originally we at home, we came from, and my parents built a house. I went to 8 schools across different cities and towns in South Africa. I'm a sports fanatic. I love reading. I love education. I love traveling. I love people. People love me. And I like what I do, which is PR, which I've been doing for 6-7 years. It's still in the media industry, mostly in radio. I produce a show on Power FM.
Now, on every episode of the In My 20s podcast, my guests always come through with these incredible mind moments or gem moments. And this is just one of them.
Yes. Whereas before, when I was in high school, I always felt like schools wanted us to be white people from England. We're just in the wrong environment.
But that's also what was praised. It's like, well can you recite Macbeth, whatever.
How much can you twang? Exactly. But Steve Biko was asking, what's wrong with me?
The In My 20s podcast is split up into 3 sections. In the first section, we get to hear a little bit more about Sia's career journey. In the second section, we dive into today's topic, which is all about reading and how reading is really the cure for ignorance. And finally, rounding up all 3 sections is a conversation about the all-encompassing 20s journey and some lessons that Sia learned along the way. So without further delay, let's get straight into it. And so, Sia, give us a little bit of insight into your background and how did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, so I did a BA law and English because my dad wanted me to study and I wanted to play football. So we sort of met halfway and he said, I signed with a team called Bushbucks in East London, and I went down, I was training, and the one day he said, oh, come to Forte in town when you're done. I said, I don't know where that is. He said, okay, I'll fetch you. And I got there, he was already halfway through the line trying to register me because I'd passed matric well enough. Nice marks. So then he registered me for this BA law because I said I didn't want to do LLB because I wanted to do writing if I was going to study anything. So he's like, okay, we'll do this one and then you'll see. Because I think in his head I was still young, I didn't know what I wanted. At the end of that year, I passed well the first year, but I was like, no, let me do football for a bit full time. And I did that. Mm-hmm. So I went to play for a team called the Val at the Val University. Mm-hmm. In the Vodacom League, which was second division. I played there for almost a year, 2006. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't renew my contract. My dad then said, okay, you need to go back to school. Mm-hmm. I said, we'll see. And I registered, got a sports scholarship with the University of Pretoria to play football for them. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of 2010, he's like, because of the World Cup thing and the football fever and journalists, whatever, he was excited. Everyone was excited. He's like, maybe you should do journalism because I really think it's an awesome career. It's like so dynamic, whatever. Now, all of a sudden, he understood why I wanted to be a journalist.
Okay.
And then he sent me Media 24 application forms to go study at Stellenbosch.
Yeah.
Obviously, Media 24 paid for some of my studies and I did my internship there. I think from 2011, end of the year.
Yeah.
With the News Now. Then News Now defunct, they closed it down. Then they took me to Channel 24, which I hated because it was entertainment media.
Okay.
But I still did it for 6 months.
Yeah.
But I was like always looking for opportunities while I was there. Finally got an opportunity with Forbes magazine after some, a few options. I chose Forbes because I thought it was the type of journalism I wanted to do. It was business. It was glamorous. I was going to go with places.
The billionaires. The top of the
I was going to meet those guys.
Yes, yeah.
So I was there.
Yeah.
And that's when I met you.
Yeah.
And then I worked at Ogilvy for just a little over a year. And then a girl I had worked with at Media 24 said, oh, I work at Magna Carta now. They've got an opening for an AM. I was like, well, okay, an AM is the next level, obviously.
Yes.
I was like, I'm not really sure if I'm there yet, but are they going to give me money? She's like, yeah, I'm going to pay you. I'm like, how much are you going to pay me? She said the money. I was like, whoa, I'm coming, man. So I went for the interviews there, and then they took me. And then I've been with Magna Carta since. So I joined in 2014, March.
Wow.
As an AM.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was promoted the following year in July to a senior account manager.
Okay.
And I've been basically working as a senior account manager ever since. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But with a lot of growth in between. Yeah.
So what do you want to do next? What is next for you? Big thing.
So now I'm moving to Playmakers. I'm going to be an account director, which is my first senior role.
Nice.
Really. But as you said, when I put my mind into something, I do tend to grab and hold on and fight and grit to get it. And so it actually feels good when it does work out, because when it doesn't, you get a bit disappointed. But
yeah. And you've mentioned your passion and love for knowledge and reading and how you've always just been that person who, in their spare time, actually is just reading and not like, you know, social media stalking people.
Yeah. I do. I also do that. There's enough 24 hours in a day to do all of them. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you become such a, I want to say, bookworm or intellect in that sense, where you've just craved knowledge and therefore have put yourself in that position?
Well, I can tell you now, my family background is like a thing, because my dad is like into reading.
Mm.
He's like, so when I was a kid, and you want to hang out with your dad when you're a kid.
Yeah.
But my dad doesn't talk like as much as I do.
Yeah.
And he just sits and crosses his legs. He doesn't even party. He doesn't even do anything. He'll just sit in the couch and open a newspaper. And like, boom, and you don't see him because he's the other side and you're the other side and you're trying to talk about the soccer.
Mm.
And then he gets irritated and he gives you the sports page and goes, read that.
Yeah.
And then you go in and you actually enjoy it. And you're like, this is cool. This is awesome. But because it was a bonding thing with my dad, then he goes on to give you books.
Mm.
And then it becomes like, but you're 9, 8, whatever. And you're just trying to hang out with your dad.
Yeah.
And so the books are a bonding thing between me and him. He doesn't drink. He doesn't socialize. So the really thing for me, even now, we engage a lot with him on politics and stuff that we read. I share articles with him. We talk about articles. We talk about current affairs that are happening.
Mm.
And yeah, so I think he put the seed and then I just took it and ran with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, reading is like quite important. I think we undervalue it now because of the whole pictures are brighter thing. I was talking to my friend yesterday about reading, and he says he's now started reading and he's quite old to start reading, but because it's actually important for him to read to career develop, he started doing it.
Mm.
And I was saying to him, like, then he mustn't miss his kids. He's got two kids.
Yeah.
And I was like, Jonty, your boys must be reading from very early, because then they become more rounded. Before they travel, they've traveled.
Yes.
I've been to Ghana, but I've never actually landed in Ghana. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
I've been to Nigeria, but I've never been to Nigeria.
Yes.
And that's my thing. I want to go to Nigeria this year, right?
Yeah.
Visit a colleague of ours here.
Okay.
And I was like, but I've been to Nigeria.
Yes.
I know. Just by reading Half a Year of the Sun, I didn't learn only about the Biafra War, but I also learned about the mannerism of Nigerians, the classism within Nigerians, the different tribes of Nigeria, you know, Igbo, Yoruba, the which area they are in, 100%. The cities, where is Port Harcourt, why would it be cut off from Lagos? I learned just by reading Half a Year of the Sun, one book.
And it just changes your mind and your perspective.
And how I view Nigerians all of a sudden, for me, was I think Nigerians are the most awesome Africans.
That I love Nigerians.
I love Nigeria. I look at Nigerians like since that time when I read Half a Year of the Sun, and I read all the other books that I try to get from Nigeria, from all the different. I mean, Chimamanda also does a good job of describing Nigerians and how and so many other writers do.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, they are flamboyant. They are, but they are intellectual. They read, they
and
study.
The
their
use
work
of
ethic,
language,
the use of language,
the slang and the lingo,
the
so you feel like you're part of it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Then I'm like, I think I want to be like. And then one friend of mine worked in Nigeria, and he used to tell me stories about Nigeria.
Yeah.
And I got fascinated by it, and I'm like, it just comes from reading. If I had never read and I just listened to what people say about Nigerians in my neck of the woods, I would have a similar idea of Nigerians that people have in South Africa, which is mostly negative. And when I look at Nigeria now, that I've worked in clients that we have there, I mean, their companies are run by Nigerians. The CEOs are from Nigeria. They are entrepreneurs in Nigeria. The biggest entrepreneurs in Africa are Nigerian. The guys running big companies.
Nigerian.
The richest man is Nigerian. You would, if I was to tell a guy in my village that the richest man in Africa is Nigerian, he would be like, he's selling drugs, Kelly. I'm like, no, my friend.
No,
not even close.
Proper,
not even close.
Also on that, it's interesting how your life is that your life perspective is framed by what you read. Mm. So I never read, or in school rather, we never read things like Things Fall Apart or Half a Yellow Sun.
Yeah.
When I read Things Fall Apart, which was 2 years ago, I was shook. Because for the first time, I had read a book about colonization from the one who was colonized. Perspective, which changed everything. It's like, whose narrative are we reading? Whose story of Africa are we actually reading?
Exactly.
So even with a number of the modern kind of like African writers and readers, it's also very interesting because it's a modern version. So it's like...
Yeah. So I was also lucky to have studied at Fort Hare. And I'm glad I insisted on studying the English part because I did English right up until the advanced English.
Mm.
And all you literally do in the English class, there's literature, there's language, there's literature is just you read books and you analyze them. And they give you the study guide that you have to analyze the symbols, what it means. And you must explain and you must. And I got distinctions for those because I really then understood. But the books we're reading, Never's Conditions, this is Dagaramba. Zimbabwe. It was The Grain of Wheat, Ngugi wa Thiong'o. It was Things Fall Apart, Chinua Achebe. It was African books. Smell of Apples.
Okay.
It was like all African literature.
Yeah. What does that do for you as a person?
Because your outlook then starts becoming, these books are talking about my stories.
Mm.
You know, they're not talking about, we had a section where we studied Macbeth and the original English European, but the big part of the work was on us, and then this would use it as a adding to us.
Yeah.
So the focus is on us, and then everything else is behind us.
Yes.
Whereas before, when I was in high school, I always felt like schools wanted us to be white people from England. We're just in the wrong environment.
But that's also what was praised. It's like, how well can you recite Macbeth's, whatever.
How much can you twang? Exactly. How English can you be?
How English can you sound?
Yeah, how English can you sound? Mm. And I'm like, yo, man, I just want to be myself. What's wrong with me? And, you know, having read Steve Biko because I write what I like, I was like, yeah, Steve Biko, what he did for, and I read it very young. And I started understanding these issues very young. And obviously, I became a bit radical very young, like in high school already. but Steve Biko was asking, what's wrong with me?
Yes.
And I'm like, I think we need to read more African stories and we need to tell more African stories because then a kid who grows up in Soweto doesn't have to act like French.
Mm.
He can just be himself in France.
Mm.
He doesn't have to go there in France and act like he's French when he's not. He can be there and say, I'm from Soweto.
Yeah.
And this is how we speak in my hood. This is how I behave.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with me. And I think for too long we're told that there's something wrong with us. There's nothing wrong with us. And by reading and telling our stories and writing and doing podcasts like this.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity for us to change the way we look at ourselves. Mm. Never mind how people look at us, because you're gonna sit here and worry about what French and English people think about you.
Mm.
I don't care.
Yeah.
If I look at other Africans the way I look at myself, that means I'm in love with myself, and therefore I'm in love with Africa, all of it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I want to touch on what you said about the culture and the language and that perspective, because do you feel like to a certain extent right now as millennials, we're not preserving our languages or our cultures? Do you feel we're losing it? And if you do feel so, how do we regain it?
I don't feel we're losing it, but language is a carrier of culture.
Mm-hmm.
But also language, like anything else, is evolving.
Mm-hmm.
So like for instance now, when you listen to Metro FM, it's an English radio station, but they speak like all the languages.
Mm.
If you call in on Metro and and I'm like, we might just be building a new language.
Okay.
You know, like Nigerians have got Pidgin English.
Mm-hmm.
We might just be creating our own new language.
Yes.
We no longer value just because you speak fluent, nice English. Now you are this great person. No.
Mm.
Now I can speak like I'm speaking now.
Mm-hmm.
And people go, oh, he's got knowledge.
Mm.
Whereas before they wouldn't listen to me. You go to a boardroom. When I first started, I remember at Ogilvy, you'd sit, stand and you'd be like, I'm never going to be able to speak like that.
No.
Because they will speak. It was mostly, obviously, white people and whatever. And it was a mix. But even the black people who spoke, I was like, yo, man, I need to be the con director. I've never been a con director. I don't twang.
Yeah.
I'm not
speaking. And they want you.
But my ideas. But I was always sure that my idea is better than that one.
Yes.
It's just that I couldn't stand in front of them and say, I couldn't. It's not me. I wasn't raised like that. I went to English schools, but my parents insisted I don't speak like with a twang. They were like, no, you're not going to use a different accent to speak a different language. You're going to use yourself.
And the thing is, if you try and be like other people, you're being a secondary version of them anyway.
I promise you, I'm a kid. I was a kid, right?
Yeah.
And I used to try. I would twang at this break time.
Mm.
Then my twang voice doesn't work the second break because I'm tired. And then now it looks like I'm not a genuine person, right?
Mm.
And it's bad. And okay. I'm like, yo, I don't want to be this person.
Mm.
I want to be myself.
Mm.
Every day I wake up now, I wake up and think of me.
Yes.
And how I am, and I'm proud and I'm happy.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of the people. Not I fit in here. I'm like, no.
Mm.
I want even my kids must like come into spaces and be themselves. Whatever they are.
Mm.
They must if the guy is gay and whatever, he must just be himself.
Mm.
He mustn't be, and we live in a country that framework wise is put that framework that everyone must be themselves.
Yeah.
But then you still find people with low self esteem and I'm saying if your parents don't inculcate the reading culture, society must.
Mm.
Because that's the culture that's going to give your self-esteem, the backbone.
Yeah.
You're not going to be flippy and floppy whenever you come to a certain space, you are Tendo. Whenever you come to the space, you are Ru. Whenever you come to the space, you are Hey, I'm Ray. Or whatever, you know. And you are going to be just yourself.
Yes,
you're going to walk
into
every space and be confident in your being yourself.
Yeah.
Whatever it is that you are. You know, you're going to say there, you're going to get there, I'm Zimbabwean. And you just look at them in the face without flinching that originally I'm from Mutapa, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not gonna have a moment of maybe I should say I'm from East London.
Yes.
When I'm from Ngamako.
Exactly.
No, I'm from Ngamako. You don't know it, Google it, my friend.
Yeah.
That's where I'm from. I'm not telling you the nearest town.
Yeah.
I'm telling you where I'm from.
In PE people usually be like, no, it's like 10 minutes outside PE. And you're like,
No,
it's not.
No, bro. It's not 10 minutes out of PE. You are from Patterson. You're from Patterson. Just be from
Patterson.
Own
it.
Own yourself. But all different parts of your life. I mean, that's the confidence that you get from reading.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying books only, reading.
Mm.
Like whatever. Like even Daniel Steele work, whatever. Read. Just read because you learn. There's stories in reading.
Mm-hmm.
You learn about Ru's story and how he became so confident.
Mm.
You know, we want to make people like Steve Biko and Mandela and Chris and like special. They are human beings.
Yeah.
You just have to read and see what drove them to. And you'll see something within yourself.
Yeah.
You can find yourself in that. You can, and now let's say for me, there's sleep, there's eating, there's physical activity, then there's reading.
Mm.
It's like breathing.
Yeah.
Reading is the fourth thing that you do. And I don't see it enough with my peers, never mind the younger millennials, but I don't see it enough
across the spectrum.
But whenever I'm in those spaces with people who read, I am amazed at the level of, I even like, yo, don't say too much here. These people read.
These people actually read.
I was at the Mistra presentation for the how the voting went analysis.
Yeah.
And I was like, just shut up and listen.
Mm.
Everyone here knows exactly already the stuff you already know.
Yeah.
Because they read, all of them. And it's a small room.
Yes.
It's not many people, but it's a small room.
So fascinating what you said about listening, because I feel like we're also, to a certain extent, sometimes our generation can be, not nervous, but They want to prove themselves.
Mm.
So even with things that they don't know, instead of being in an environment and go, I'm surrounded by people who have more knowledge and who are more intellectual than I am, and I could leave this room having the same knowledge that they have from that book, you're just like, no, let me tell you, instead of just pausing and being quiet.
You're right. The younger generation is the me generation.
Mm.
And it's an argument I always have. I like talking, but as I've grown, I've also learned listening is actually not a better skill, but it's a good skill to have.
Mm.
As someone who likes speaking, I've had to learn, because if I do this, keep quiet and look at you talking, I might lose you.
Mm.
But if I say, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Or is it?
Then
that's me listening. I'm engaged on this, that. But, and I will never forget the conversation, because I was listening like that.
Yeah.
If I kept quiet and you spoke, I will not. But
you would have zoned out.
Yeah, I would have probably zoned out, because my brain is doing 100 things. It's going at 120 the whole time.
Mm.
But listening is a very, very key thing. And I find that the younger generations don't listen.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about keeping quiet and staring at me.
Mm.
I'm talking about listening active, like taking what I'm saying and processing it in your head.
Yeah.
And then coming out with something, a response. Always have a response.
Yes.
If you must, but it has to be like from a well thought place.
Yes.
And reading can help you with listening.
Yeah.
Because you will understand that when you read, there's no one who's ever read and said, I became more stupid.
Wow. Okay. If the formula is knowledge is power, and the more you read, the more smarter or more of an intellectual will become.
Mm.
Therefore, the less you read, the less of an intellect you will become. Therefore, based on that, if us as a generation aren't reading more, is that what the conclusion is? Or how are we gaining our
knowledge? Well, yes. If you go through the human history, there's a book called From Fire to Freud. That's a bottom tag. But the book basically speaks about the human history.
Okay.
Right. And there was a stage after the Renaissance. There was a stage, I think it was before the Renaissance, where people stopped reading. And the world became more stupid.
Oh, wow.
There was less discoveries. There was less solving of issues. There was, because they stopped reading.
Mm.
And then the Renaissance awakened that.
Mm.
And the Renaissance now became, the Renaissance man, what they would call it.
Yeah.
Was now, the universities started coming in the, and the world started developing technology again.
Mm.
So all these technologies we are now, Facebook and those have.
Yeah.
If we stop having people who think about those solutions, we are going to go back. Mm. The world does regress. People, like they've got this idea that the world will never regress. The world can regress.
Yeah.
Anything can regress.
Mm.
You could, same way you can make money and lose it.
Mm.
Same way you can gain knowledge and lose it.
Okay.
You know, if I have a car accident and I get amnesia, I've lost my all that knowledge. I must regain it.
Mm.
The brain would have to build itself, that bank again. So whatever you've gained, you can lose.
Yeah, okay.
And are we losing it? I think we are. I think because we are now starting to think similar, and everyone thinks they're different, but they all wear the same stuff. But they are I don't know how they're different if you are all wearing the same stuff. So we've lost a lot of intellectual ability, and it comes from what? I mean, people now go to school like quick just to get a job. They don't go, academia is not a fun, sexy career. So there's less young. I was impressed this morning with the Mellon Garden list. I was actually impressed by the number of PhD candidates in their 20s.
Wow.
And I was like, that's amazing. Because it means that there's still some people who take education seriously.
Mm.
Like, with my dad's generation and them, they all wanted to get PhDs.
Mm.
I thought it was going to give you money. It doesn't give you money. It does give you a sort of clout when you speak. And we don't care about anything that doesn't give us money.
Yeah.
Right? We, that generation, just, I want to make money and I just want to pull it and then I don't know what I want to do.
Mm.
We just want to get money. Mm. We don't know why we want money. We want material things and that's it. We're shallow generation. And I'm like, how then do you move humanity? Are you going to move humanity by just having money? No, it won't go anywhere.
Mm.
It won't develop. If you can't develop new medicines, you can't develop new ways of working. You can't, if we stop doing that, new ways of communication, whatever, if we stop being the ones who elevate humanity, humanity will slow down.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not, I've got 100 million in my bank account, so you're going to die and leave it here.
Mm.
We're not living to make money. I know we come from a poverty background and we always think that our money is going to solve all our problems. It doesn't.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people who've got money will tell us that it doesn't solve all their problems.
Yeah.
You know, but it does make maybe the material part of life nicer.
Easier.
But they still have to wake up. Yeah. I mean, why would Bill Gates wake up?
Mm.
He's fixing toilets in Devon.
Yeah.
He's got billions. He could sit at home.
The purpose behind it.
Yeah. I mean, does he wake up thinking about his billions? I don't think so.
No.
He doesn't work. He works.
He hired someone to do that for him.
Yeah. He does what he wants to
do.
That's the stuff he needs to do for humanity.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, what is that? The Bill Gates and Melinda Foundation
thing. Mm. I read a fantastic kind of percentage and stats, and it said, like, you know, the majority of the wealthiest and the most successful people in the world focus on healthy eating, exercising, meditation, and reading. And that, like, on average, billionaires it was the top billionaires in the world read about 2 books a week. And I feel like I'm like 2 books every 4 months and I'm good. But it's like the pace at which you're acquiring the knowledge.
Mm.
Warren Buffett spends 80% of his time reading.
Reading is very, very important.
Mm.
It's so important that I actually, at my place, I don't have a couch, so I don't have to sit in the dining room. But I've got Netflix. Okay. I'm always embarrassed and I have people over because I have to find them a place to sit.
Mm.
And that's why I don't want people over my place. But I've got a bookshelf.
Okay.
And by side of my bed, I've always got books.
Okay.
So I'm on social media a lot,
mm-hmm.
But between social media, I'm on my book.
Okay.
And and it's a purpose thing. I've cut off DSTV, only have Netflix for movies when you're chilling with someone. And But I sit. Now, if I get a couch, I'll probably sit on the couch and sleep on it and read.
And read.
That's more intellectually engaging for me. And at my stage where I am in my life, I'm enjoying it. I don't want to prescribe how many books people should read.
Mm.
I think the quality of the read is better than the amount, the quantity. like if you read Steve Biko, I Write What I Like, it shifts your whole life and being as a black man, you know, as a black person.
Okay.
It shifts how you view the world. It really touches you. So having read under 10 books by everyone, does it matter? It doesn't matter. Mm. But every book I touch, so that's why I go to exclusive books and bargain books and whatever books, and I go check and I read and I say, how can this book shift me? How can what part of my being will this book touch?
Mm.
And I'm not just like one person. I've got like many types of books, right?
Mm.
I've got books that deal with my mind. I've got books now that deal with marriage, because I'm like that age where I'm gonna start thinking about how will I treat my partner. What wrongs have I done when I was dating? What can I improve as a human being? So I'm hoping the books I read do influence what happens in my marriage for the rest of my life.
Mm.
And in business, I've read books on business a lot last year because I was studying business. And how can you move? What strategy is this? Politics, what does it mean for us to vote? I read those on purpose.
Mm.
And so then it feels like, oh, he almost knows everything. I don't.
Mm.
But I've chosen the right books to read, which give me an idea of something. So when I come into a room, I never sit and go, I don't know what they're talking about.
Mm.
I could sit with actuaries, or I could sit with nurses, or I could sit with, I'd have an idea of whatever it is. I might not know everything, but I must have an idea. That came from the journalist mentality, but it was helped by the reading across for different life purposes.
So Sia, we've spoken extensively about, you know, about reading, which was a huge part of your 20s journey as well. But as a summary, what was your 20s journey like?
It's interesting because my 20s, by the time they hit, I was already playing football at quite a serious level.
Mm.
And I was just taking it that seriously. And I didn't think about anything else because I thought that's all I'm going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe just before the mid-20s, I had to start thinking about my next life.
Mm.
So I was actually having the second part of my life already in the 20s.
Mm.
And then I started going back to school, reading, getting involved in politics. I got a lot involved in, I think actually everyone who's in university should get involved in politics, even if they're just a bench warmer.
Mm.
We changed so many things in the university. Before fees must fall, I can tell you that we were already doing a lot of reactions within the student political body, which is actually a very good place to learn about how the country functions.
Mm.
And I think everyone should, I think if you're a university student, join a certain party, a party, stand for something, learn something, join a society. Don't just go to study books and then leave. You know, it's important to be involved. You don't have to be a leader.
Yeah.
Like, you can be a leader in business after you're done studying, but at least you will know how ANC does, or SASCO, who represents ANC and DASO, what they do, how do they affect society,
what they even stand for.
And then you actually even understand what a Fields Must Fall movement, where does it come from?
Mm.
And then you would be able to react accordingly as that corporate person that you want to be.
Mm.
And we're all there, we're fun, we're young, but we've made lifelong connections. And I think in your 20s, that's what you should be doing. Don't be docile in your 20s. It just defeats the purpose of life.
Mm.
Be engaged with society. That's when you must be joining a political party charity organization. You are doing stuff with your life. It's not just you wake up and go to work and come back, and then you're gonna wonder why others progress and others don't. People don't progress because they're educated. We're all educated. People progress because, oh, I need the CEO, my friend. Can I? Yeah. Let me be the CEO.
Wow.
And that's it. Because we're all educated. I mean, why must I choose you over the other one? Because you went to school. He also went to school.
Mm.
I'm choosing this one because actually I've worked with him and I've seen him at his worst.
Wow.
And I understand that he can run this business properly.
Wow.
People work with people. You know, they're not working with titles and degrees and whatever.
That's so true.
Yeah,
people and how work you with people. Connect with people.
Yeah,
and
we need to. Seen. Yeah, we you need to make sure that people actually can live with you.
Mm.
Can you live with people? Yeah. That good for you.
Wow.
We are on earth with other people.
I'm sorry, I'm stuck on the quote. People don't progress because they're educated, but that is so true.
Mm.
Because you'll even go to whatever coffee shop or wherever, and if you actually engage with your waiters and waitresses, you'll find some of them have master's degrees.
Yeah.
And
you're
just like,
Why
are you not earning this is the average master's salary?
Yeah.
It's your connections,
it's
your
not,
contacts.
Yeah, it's your contacts, your networks, and how you nurture them. And, and I'm not saying now go out and make 100 friends. You could have 5 friends and all of them are actually the ones. That's something with the books. Just if you think about what you're doing, you are more likely, like I don't go out to look for friends.
Mm.
I go out to click.
Mm.
Like if I meet you and we don't click, I'm like, yeah, it's okay, cool, bro. And then I know you. Then I'm like, sharp.
We don't need to do that.
But if you click,
yeah.
Then I'm like calling you, bro. Whether it's a girl or it's a guy, I just want to hang out, want to talk to them.
Yeah.
I want to be like, yo, let's meet for drinks. You know, because I know, we've got the similar interests. Oh, like this one likes partying. Oh, so I like going out.
Mm.
Oh, this one likes reading. Oh, then we're going to hang out.
Yeah.
Then people should hang. Then you click and then you become, being sociable is not a disaster, but obviously don't overdo it. Don't be something you're not, but do enjoy life in your 20s.
Yeah.
Do enjoy life. It's a beautiful time.
Okay.
Responsibly. Do it responsibly.
Mm.
And I think you'll set up yourself for a very good time in your 30s. Yeah.
Cool. Two questions on the 20s journey. Have you ever experienced the quarter life crisis? Did you ever go through a moment where you're like, oh my gosh, what is happening?
Yeah.
And what was it?
That's when I left Tugs.
Mm.
And I was like, I don't think I'm going to make it in life. I failed. I'm not making it in the first team.
Wow.
I'm over partying. I'm known by the bouncers in the club. That's a big sign that you should calm down when the bouncers know you.
When they greet you, they're like,
yeah. Hey. And I then had an honest conversation with my dad and I said, let's restart.
Mm.
In football, there's a thing called you build a move and then you go towards the final phase and then you can't score. There's no opportunity. And then you say restart.
Okay.
And you go back to the back line and restart. And now we restarted and I think we're almost scoring.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Sure. And with all of the knowledge that you've shared with us today, and I think reading is so important and the culture of reading and putting that back in its place, resetting and restarting. Mm. So it is up there. What advice would you have for people in their 20s right now who are, I guess, just in general, like what general advice do you have from people in their 20s based on your life experience?
Get up every morning and go do what drives you.
Mm-hmm.
Go, if you don't have it, look for it. Yeah. Okay. My dad always said that even when I was young, like you're going to make mistakes. You are going to hit brick walls. You are going to fail. You are going to fall. It is not how many times you fall. It is not how many failures you have. It's you getting up every day. And I find that if you're passionate about something, it's easy to get up. You can fail. If you want to be a doctor and you are studying medicine and you are failing some modules, it's easy for you to redo them and can continue until you become a doctor. Your persistence levels are easily encouraged by having passion for something. Don't do stuff because other people are doing it. Do the stuff that you love. And you might just make it because failing there will be easier to get up for.
Oh my mind moments of note. First of all, Sia, I want to say thank you so much for coming on to today's episode of the In My 20s podcast. You are an incredible storyteller and you have such a passion for reading and reading African literature. Every single time you mentioned an African author, I wrote it down and I was like, oh my word, need to read. I'm not reading enough. So thank you so much for shedding light onto the importance of reading. So guys, I want to say thank you so much for listening to today's podcast episode. If you would like to feature on the In My 20s podcast, or if you know an incredible 20-something-year-old who has a beautiful story to tell, or there is a topic that they're passionate about, please comment on any of our social media posts, be it on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, on all of the other platforms that we're on, and just hit us up. We want to engage with you guys. Otherwise, we will catch you in August, same time, right here on In My 20s. In my 20s, in my 20s, how old are you? I am the age that I said that I am when I told you I met you. I am in my 20s. I'm spiraling through my 20s. Okay, bye.